Welcome back, dudes and dudettes. This is episode number 152 of The Anxious Truth, 152. Today's topic is agoraphobia. We're going to talk about agoraphobia, what it is, what it isn't, how it develops, how you treat it, all of that. The name of the episode is Agoraphobia Explained, or Explaining Agoraphobia. I haven't decided exactly what the title is going to be, but a lot of people want me to explain agoraphobia and talk about it, so let's do that today. It's actually taken me 152 episodes to do this, which I find amazing, but it's true. So today we're going to talk about what agoraphobia is, what it isn't, some of the misconceptions. We're going to talk about how it develops most commonly, what it means, the impacts, and how you go about dealing with it from a recovery standpoint. But before we do, and this week, this is particularly germane to the topic, because when I wrote this book, which is called The Anxious Truth, just like the podcast, the subtitle of the book is A Step-by-Step Guide to Understanding and Overcoming Panic, Anxiety, and Agoraphobia. So I literally wrote it directly into the wheelhouse of agoraphobics, because I was one. I was agoraphobic multiple times in my life. So the book is called The Anxious Truth, A Step-by-Step Guide to Understanding and Overcoming Anxiety, Panic, and Agoraphobia. It is written as a course in how to recover from an anxiety disorder, and I wrote using agoraphobia as one of the models of recovery. So if you're agoraphobic, this book is definitely for you. I wrote it as a course in how to recover. It goes step-by-step in a very logical sequence, talk about how you got there, what the nature of the problem is, what's the nature of the solution, how you make your recovery plan. It's incredibly detailed in terms of the steps you take to overcome agoraphobia, and then what happens when you're done and you've recovered. So it covers all of those stuff in a logical sequence. Go check it out on my website at theanxioustruth.com/recovery guide. By all accounts, I actually did write a very useful agoraphobia recovery tool based on the feedback that I'm getting, which I appreciate, by the way. I appreciate you guys a lot. So if you are one of those people who has the book already and you're using it in your agoraphobia or your anxiety recovery and you're digging it, head on over to Amazon and write me your review. Helps out. I really appreciate that. So there you go. This week, the book plug, the obligatory book plug, is particularly relevant to the topic. So agoraphobia, let's get into it. Let's talk about what agoraphobia isn't first. So there's some common misconceptions about what agoraphobia is. Kind of old-fashioned definitions. Fear of open spaces. And that kind of comes from the Latin root of the word agora, the marketplace, fear of the marketplace. Yes, people can't go into the big open space of the marketplace. Okay, that's true. That's what agoraphobia kind of looks like. Most people would say, and that's an old-fashioned definition, but most people would say, oh, that's agoraphobia. That's when you can't leave your house. And yeah, that's true. In the vast majority of cases, agoraphobics decide that their home is their safe zone and they are afraid to leave that place. So that's true too. But while that's what agoraphobia looks like, that's not really what defines agoraphobia, right? So here's what agoraphobia is. You can say it's the fear of leaving your house, but it's really not. Agoraphobia is the ultimate expression of avoidance and retreat. And what are you avoiding and retreating from? Panic symptoms, anxiety symptoms. So agoraphobia is really defined by extreme avoidance based on fear of anxiety and panic symptoms. And it sort of looks like this. Here's the logical sequence. You can have agoraphobia without having panic disorder. Technically, there is such a diagnosis. I have never seen it. So if you're listening to me, I'm going to assume, or you're reading my book, or you're following me on social media, I'm going to assume that you have followed this sequence, which is by far and away the most common sequence, which is panic attack, then panic attacks, plural, then fear of the next panic attacks, and doing the best you can to try to avoid them and keep them from happening. That's panic disorder. Then you begin to avoid more and more places where those panic attacks might happen or anxiety might happen. Avoid, avoid, avoid. Add to the list of places that you avoid and then decrease the number of places where you feel safe, in air quotes. And that would be safe from panic. Right? So you're not afraid to leave your house or go into the open spaces. You're afraid of what will happen if you leave the house. So it's not the outdoors, it's not the supermarket, it's not the highway, it's not the school, it's not your office, it's not your school, it's not a hospital. It's none of those places. It's how you are afraid you might feel when you go into those places. So agoraphobia is just the extreme expression of avoidance and retreat. It's avoidance and retreat run amok. And that avoidance and retreat is driven by a fear of how you feel. It's a fear of the next wave of anxiety, the symptoms, the sensations, and the thoughts that come with it. the fear of the next panic attack, and then you decide, I can't drive on the highway because I had a panic attack on the highway, so I can't do that anymore. I might panic if I do that, and I cannot allow that to happen. I cannot go to the supermarket because I had a panic attack in the supermarket, or it felt like I might have a panic attack in the supermarket, so I cannot go back there because I cannot allow that to happen. I can't walk too far from the house through the neighborhood because when I do that, it feels like I might panic, and I cannot allow that to happen, so I can't walk too far from the house. I cannot go to my kid's concert at school because it feels like I might panic, or I've had a panic attack at the school, and I cannot allow that to happen again, so I can't go back to the school. You see where this is headed? See where this is going? That's why the logical sequence of events that applies to the vast majority of people who become agoraphobic is panic attack, panic attacks, panic disorder, extreme avoidance, agoraphobia, and you wind up in agoraphobia land. That's how most of you listening, I would venture to guess all of you listening, got to be where you are right now if you're agoraphobic. If you're having a problem leaving your house, that's how you got there. So that's what agoraphobia is. Agoraphobia starts with a panic attack, develops into panic attacks, fear of that, panic disorder, avoidance run amok, boom, agoraphobia. That's what it is. Yes, you're afraid to leave your house, but that's not what defines the disorder, as you can see. And agoraphobia is not really a special new kind of anxiety. It's really important because people will say like, oh, I'm having panic attacks. That's a problem. Okay. Oh no, I just got diagnosed with panic disorder. That's another problem. No, that's really the same problem as the panic attacks. And then, oh no, I have panic disorder with agoraphobia. That's a diagnosis. Now I have three problems. I have panic attacks, panic disorder, and agoraphobia. No, again, they're all really the same problem. You have panic attacks and you're afraid of them. So don't feel like agoraphobia is, oh no, I have another diagnosis. I have another illness. That's not true. These are all come together. And we're talking about another part of this that becomes extremely common for people with panic disorder and especially agoraphobics. This is going to be interesting, and we'll bring it up in a minute. But that's what agoraphobia is, and that's how we define it, and that's how it gets developed. The more things that you decide you are unwilling to do in life, because if you do, you might panic, or you have panicked doing those before, so therefore you must never allow that to happen again. The more things in life that you cross off the list of acceptable, can't go there, won't go there, can't go there, won't go there, too scared to go there, the places that you feel safe, because agoraphobia is really driven by that hell-bent for leather need to find only the safe places. And the safe places are defined as, these are the places and contexts and situations where I probably won't panic. I won't have a big anxiety spike. I won't feel my heart racing. I won't feel dizzy. I won't feel like I'm going crazy. I won't have those scary thoughts. I won't feel like I'm going to vomit. I can be in those places. And in the end, that becomes a very small list of places, usually your own home. Now that gets modified to a certain extent. There are agoraphobics that can leave their home and find that the car, their vehicle, becomes an extension of the safe place called home. The car becomes an extension of the safe place. However, they can't, just like the agoraphobic can't walk too far from home. The agoraphobic might be able to drive an hour from home, but then can't walk any more than 2 minutes away from the car. The car just becomes an extension. But that's pretty restrictive too, because it's great to be able to get in your car and drive, but if you can't leave the car, well, that kind of curtails the amount of things that you can do in life. So that is one interesting modification of agoraphobia that I see all the time. Another thing that's super common is the agoraphobics will say they can leave the house and pretty much participate in the basics of life for the most part, so long as somebody is with them, so long as there is a safe person. So agoraphobics and people with panic disorder invariably wind up designating certain people as safe people. We don't know why that person becomes a safe person. They know about your panic attacks. You tell them about it. They're aware. Usually it's a partner, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a wife, husband, whatever, right? So those people become your safe people. Parents, siblings, very close friends, sometimes coworkers can become safe people. And in different contexts, you may have different safe people. At home, your partner is your safe person. If you can manage to modify agoraphobia where you can still get to work, I can stay home, I can go to work, that's it. Because at work, I have these two coworkers, they're my work safe people. That happens all the time. People with agoraphobia find safe people. But the concept of a safe person is just a person that you think will save you from your panic. If I need to be rushed to a hospital, because I think panic means I'm dying, that person will save me. They're my safe person. If I just get really, really afraid, they will talk me down. Somehow or other, if I'm with this person, nothing bad can happen to me. But again, it all comes back to the fact that you are afraid of the panic. You're afraid of the anxiety, the symptoms, the sensations, the thoughts, the panic, all of that, the fear, the discomfort, the uncertainty. You're afraid of that. even though it's never actually harmed you, you become afraid of that to the point where you will avoid most of life in order for that not to ever happen again. And then we pick these safe people that we think somehow will get us through if it does happen. So safe people are like a life preserver. So a lot of agoraphobics will be able to leave the house and participate in things so long as the safe person is there or safe people are there. On the most extreme side are agoraphobics that literally not only become housebound, but they become stuck in one room of the house or even one piece of furniture. So you might be listening to me right now and you rarely, if ever, leave your sofa or you rarely, if ever, get out of bed. That is pretty much the most extreme form of agoraphobia. For some agoraphobics, that is it. They are confined to one or two pieces of furniture in their house, one or two rooms in their house. I personally know of agoraphobics that I would call friends that are in that situation where they can stay on the sofa. And when it's time to make a trip to the bathroom, because human beings have got to go to the bathroom, it is a struggle. It is get there and get back to that sofa as quick as possible. So when you avoid, and indulge that fear. Oh, of course I'm never going to. The panic is terrible. Why would I want to panic again? I'm just going to not allow it to happen, which I know seems logical, but you see the problem here. You see where it starts to lead when you leave that unchecked. And if you're listening to this because you're agoraphobic, you know where it's led you. So that insistence that, no, we have to make sure that panic never happens. And so part of the way I will do that is to never go to the places where it might happen. Things can get nasty really quickly. So when somebody develops agoraphobia, what's the impact? There are impacts to this, right? These impact lifestyle, economics, mental health, relationships. There's a bunch of impacts of agoraphobia. First and foremost, social isolationism, right? You wind up being isolated. If you are not going to leave your house, you're going to have a very restrictive set of rules of how, when, and why you will leave the house. And it must be at this time of day, can only be, you know, close to the car. I got to be able to see a door so I can see the car, and I have to have a safe person with me. When you add those bunch of restrictions in your life, you are naturally going to curtail your social interaction. And so I'm recording this in April of 2021, and we are now a year into the global coronavirus pandemic, if you're listening down the road. Remember those days? Remember mask wearing days? Well, we're in the middle of that now, hopefully at the tail end, hopefully. And look, for the last 12 months, the entire world has been given a glimpse of what the life of an agoraphobic is socially. So when we hear people talking about the pandemic, the coronavirus pandemic, and how it has socially isolated them, welcome to agoraphobia. And if you are an agoraphobic, you understand what I'm talking about. It will quickly lead to have you to being disconnected and isolated when it comes to family, friends, you know, your social circle kind of dissolves. It breaks apart really quickly. Now, we have technology. So sadly, one of the things about the technological society that we're in right now is that much of the technology and the way it has impacted our economy in terms of on-demand products and services and being able to communicate without being in person has really enabled agoraphobia in a big way. Like, it's easier in 2021 to be an agoraphobic than it's ever been in the history of recorded man, right? So it is actually a whole lot easier to be agoraphobic now because we have Zoom and FaceTime and we can text and send voice messages, and you can have your groceries delivered, and you can have food delivered, and you could do telemedicine with your doctors, and like, it has really become very easy to be an agoraphobic, but it's still not easy. So aside from being socially isolated, because there's really, in the end, no substitute for being in person with people, right? There's no substitute for your grandma's birthday party on Zoom. There's no substitute for your niece's birthday party. There's no substitute for graduation ceremony. There's no substitute for a wedding or a funeral or just a night out at a restaurant sharing a meal or going to a movie or a play or a concert or just going to the park. There really is no substitute for that, and we are social animals. So the isolation that agoraphobia brings is absolutely a problem. Agoraphobia also steals independence because when you have so many restrictions on where you can go and what you will do, there are a lot of things that you just can't do. Can't go to the bank, can't go to the dry cleaners, can't go to the supermarket, can't go to the mall, can't go to a restaurant or the movies or park or on vacation. Can't do that. Not going to do it. Can't do it because I might panic and we must never allow that to happen. Well, when you do that, you kind of lose your independence because you start to rely on other people to do things for you. They may be family and friends, So in a, you know, in a partnership, a marriage, a domestic partnership where there are kids involved and kids need to be shuttled around to activities and things happen as they're growing up and they get their own friends, one partner may become very dependent upon the other. Dad can't drive the kids around, so mom has to do it all. That was my situation. It was a big problem. That's really what led, that was, for me, that was the final straw. My agoraphobia stopped me from doing dad things. That was the end. That is when I decided I'm not doing this anymore, and I fixed it. But yeah, you lose your independence. Even if in this age where we have an economy based on demand, on delivery, it's still, you're still dependent upon the Uber Eats guys. You're still dependent upon the Peapod delivery guys or Instacart or whatever you use to get your stuff, right? So you're still dependent upon other people. It will rob you of your independence. You might not choose to go to the grocery store, even if you're not agoraphobic. A lot of people use grocery delivery because it's just convenient. But when you can't, because you're terrified to be in a grocery store, pandemics aside, that's a different animal. You lose independence, and that wears on you after a while. Agoraphobia will strain a relationship in a big way, especially if your relationship partner becomes your safe person and you are dependent upon them to take care of a lot of life tasks that you refuse to engage in because of your fear of your own body and mind. So agoraphobia will strain a relationship in a big way. You become dependent upon those safe people. You need them to get through. And sometimes they just need a break. And to be honest with you, they don't understand why we are like this. They just don't. They may see that we are struggling and they, you know, people who care about us and love us don't want us to struggle and they can be sympathetic to us, but they cannot empathize because they know that there is no reason to be afraid of the grocery store. They understand that. But when you start to rely on those safe people and you begin to refuse to engage in regular life events like social events, family events, business stuff. I can't work, so I can't contribute to the household because I'm agoraphobic. We can't go to dinner with our friends because I can't do that because I'm agoraphobic. We can't go to, you know, your cousin's wedding because we're agoraphobic. Or you go, I'll stay home. You go, I'll stay home. When you refuse to participate, that sort of stuff strains a relationship. That's true. That's true. Here's an interesting little thing that I'll throw in there. Agoraphobia also sometimes will highlight maybe not a great relationship, because I have seen way too many instances in relationships for agoraphobics where the partner who is not agoraphobic is kind of okay with it because they like being able to control the other person. They like being needed. They like being the one that has to do everything. So I've seen instances where somebody recovering from agoraphobia suddenly discovers cracks in their relationship. Relationship problems are there. Relationship thing we're going to come back to because of the thing called monophobia, but agoraphobia also complicates everything in your life. Everything gets complicated. When there are restrictions on just about everything because you're afraid of how you might feel when you go do a thing or go do a place or go outside your perceived safe bubble, everything gets complicated. There is so, look, and this is speaking from an ex-agoraphobic twice in my life that I had to deal with this. It is difficult to engineer life around agoraphobia. Where can I go? When can I go? Who's going to be there? How long do I have to be there? So the things that people without this disorder just do without thinking about it, they take for granted. Well, you don't. There's a whole lot of engineering that goes into to getting around agoraphobia. A lot of moving parts to manage all the time. Who's going to be home? Who's going to be able to drive? Am I going to be left alone? Getting to monophobia in a second. You know, who's going to be at this event? Is it anybody that might make me panic? How long do we have to stay? How far away is it? Well, you know, I don't have to fly, do we? Do we have to drive over any bridges? So those things matter. Yeah, and life gets very complicated when you have to juggle all of those variables that the rest of people don't juggle. They're not taken into consideration, but agoraphobics do. And in the end, agoraphobia will create real mental and emotional exhaustion. Agoraphobics become really emotionally and mentally exhausted because that is hard work, right? Being isolated, being dependent upon people, straining your relationship, and having to engineer all kinds of details in life that most people never think about is exhausting. It is exhausting and it is discouraging because you are working so hard just to try and hold a life together, yeah, at the most basic level. And most people don't have to work that hard to just hold their life together at that basic level. It becomes exhausting and then disheartening and discouraging. Like, why? Life is so hard for me. This is exhausting. And yet I'm still living under so many restrictions. So I'm working really hard And yet I'm still under these incredible amount of restrictions that all my friends and family don't understand and they're not under. So agoraphobia takes a toll. I've been there. It takes a toll. I get it. I see you. I feel you. It is exhausting. It is all of those things. It is discouraging. I understand. I really do. There is nothing worse than being an agoraphobic. I shouldn't say nothing worse. There's a lot of things worse, probably. But from an agoraphobic and anxiety standpoint, I can't think of many things that were more difficult memories than standing at the front door of one's house and deliberating for 30 minutes about stepping out. Like, chew on that a little bit. That's a weird way to live. So let's talk about one other little wrinkle that comes with agoraphobia, and that is monophobia. Now, monophobia is not a technical diagnosis that I'm aware of. I'd have to go look that up, but I do not believe that monophobia appears anywhere in the DSM. Oh, yes, you have monophobia. Monophobia, a lot of people say, well, it's a fear of myself. No, it's a fear of being alone. I think it's an informal term that's come into use probably over the last 20 years or so to identify this thing that often happens to people that have panic disorder and agoraphobia. So when you are agoraphobic, there's a very good chance that you want to be home, but you don't want to be there alone. So follow me on this. And this was me too. So if you are agoraphobic and monophobic, meaning you have no tolerance for being left alone, alone in the house, alone in the office, alone, you always have to know that there's somebody in the house, there's somebody near you, there's somebody around, a safe person, somebody that can save you, right? When you are in that situation, talk about exhausting. I can't leave the house. I have to stay in the house, but I have to make sure that somebody else is in the house all the time. That is another exhausting way to live. And talk about straining a relationship. Because people who develop monophobia talk about going through great lengths to never be left alone, to engineer a life. I know monophobics that will literally follow their partner around all day long on errands to work. To work. This is not uncommon. I know people who develop agoraphobia who then develop monophobia, the fear of being left alone for any significant of length of time, more than a couple of minutes. They will literally get up in the morning and get in the car and drive to an office or a workplace with their partner and then sit in the Starbucks across the street or in the parking lot playing on their phone or trying to do their own classwork or work or being on social media or just killing time by sitting in the parking lot all day long while their partner goes to work. Or they have to go hang out at a neighbor or a relative or somebody has to come and stay with them. So monophobia is a real part of agoraphobia that develops for many, many people and we don't talk about it. And when I bring this to light, a lot of people go like, oh my God, I have that. Yes, I have that. I thought I was the only one. And that is embarrassing because you feel like you must be babysat all the time. That's a tough one. So that's part of monophobia. That's part of agoraphobia too. I wanted to bring it out there. So let's get on to how do you solve this problem? What do we do? Right? So let's talk about that. All right, let's go back to the beginning where we talked about what agoraphobia really is, which is just a fear of how you're going to feel, right? Agoraphobia is the fear of panic, anxiety, all the symptoms that come with it, and avoidance of all the places where that may get triggered. If that's what agoraphobia really is, and that's what defines it, then that's a clue as to how we solve this problem. And you're going to hate this, and I know you've probably heard me say this about a million times, but the basis of just about all anxiety recovery is to go toward the things that you fear. In the end, if you are afraid to leave your house, or you are afraid to go certain places because of your agoraphobia, or you're afraid to stay home alone, then the things that you have to do are exactly that, right? You have to start to leave your house. You have to start to stay home alone. You have to start to go do the things that will trigger your panic and your anxiety that you are so desperate to avoid. So the way we solve the problem of agoraphobia is to understand what it is and then start to reverse that. We have to put the avoidance in reverse. Now, if you have been stuck in your house for the last 6 months and you've only left a few times, or you can only go to three places and only with your safe person, you can't be away from the car, you have to be able to see the house. I don't care how extreme it is. You don't go from that to, you know what, let's hop on a plane and go to Tokyo. We don't do that. That's not how we solve the problem of agoraphobia. And many times agoraphobics will get so fed up with what's going on, they think, that's it, I've had enough, I'm fixing this today. And they think they can fix it by going from homebound to getting in the car and driving 300 miles away and trying to stay overnight for a weekend. And it turns into a nightmare. Can't do it. Unfortunately, I would love it if we could solve the problem that way, but it almost never works that way. Almost never. So when I say you have to start doing the things that you are afraid to do because you think they will trigger your anxiety and panic, that is correct, but you have to start doing them in tiny little steps. Tiny little steps. So for people who are agoraphobic, when I work with those people, we often start right in the house. Like recovery starts in the house. Like literally learning to go slowly and relax your body and breathe and be mindful of what you're doing. You have to start doing the work even in your own house to start to learn how to build a new default reaction to anxiety and panic and fear. So instead of going into OMG mode, WTF mode, I got to get out of here mode, tensing, bracing, panting, pacing, poking, prodding, body language, snapping, you know, rubber bands and mints and water and all kinds of all the safety behaviors and going into this frantic escape from those feelings, you have to start right at home practicing a new reaction to those things, which looks a lot like nothing. Just relaxing your body, learning where to put your focus when you need to, and just being able to breathe properly. That's it. It looks a whole lot like nothing. So you have to start at the smallest thing, practicing those things right at home. Right? You can practice those things right at home. And then you start to apply those new things in real, what we now we start talking about exposures. You guys have heard about exposures, right? So your exposures, this is how we fix agoraphobia, is we begin to slowly, incrementally, and systematically do the things that we have been refusing to do. And that might literally mean doing nothing more than practicing getting ready, washing up, taking a shower, getting dressed as if you're going to go out. You can literally start with that. That's okay. You can start by learning to practice the act of getting ready to leave your house, getting your car keys, putting your shoes on, putting your coat on, staying relaxed while you do it. Yeah, you might panic because it feels like, oh no, this is what it feels like when I'm going to leave the house and I'm going to panic now. Okay. Well, you have to learn to put your shoes on while you're panicking. That's okay. You can do that. So you can start that small. And then one day you're going to literally walk out that door and spend 30 seconds on your front step. And then you can go back inside and you're going to repeat that 30 seconds 10 times that day. And the day after and the day after and the day after. And then that 30 seconds will become a minute. And then that minute will become 2 minutes. And then it will become 5 minutes and then 10 minutes. And then you're going to start to walk down the driveway and practice that over and over and over. And learn how to tolerate and move through and navigate through all of those feelings that come up. The sensations, the panic, the anxiety, you do not retreat. We work through it. We tolerate, right? We do not run from it. And the principle here is that we can take, the reason why you start to become afraid of those things is that your brain decided, this is an alarm situation. We are not safe. It was wrong. It's doing its job, but it got it wrong. It sounded a false alarm and you went along for the ride. And you said, okay, I'm going to go home. I'm going to leave here. I'm going to make myself safe. I'm going to call my husband, my wife, I'm going to snap rubber band, I'm going to drink water, whatever I do, right? I'm going to sniff my lavender oil, whatever it is you've decided to do and avoid. You essentially rewarded your brain for being wrong, for sounding false alarms. And it made a mistaken link between being uncomfortable, being afraid, and being in danger. Now, oftentimes fear does indicate danger in the real world, but in this case, it didn't. It made a mistake and it sounded an alarm based on a faulty connection between discomfort and danger. And you went along with it. So the way we solve this problem is slowly and incrementally reversing that process. Okay, brain, go ahead and sound the alarm. I know you're gonna, but it's false and I'm not going to listen to you this time. And then over time, incrementally, systematically, repetitively, what you are feeding your brain is experiences that it needs. Little by little. So for an agoraphobic that can't get off the sofa, just going and sitting in the kitchen for 5 minutes may be a huge task. But when you sit in the kitchen and allow all those things to happen without reacting to them, and I understand how hard that is, how scary that is, it takes courage. I know it might sound crazy for some of you listening to hear that sitting in your kitchen could take courage for some people, but it does. But when you display that courage and you don't run, and you start to go toward the things that you fear systematically, incrementally, in baby steps over and over and over, increasing, little by little, you are feeding the fear center in your brain incrementally positive experiences. And you're going to say, what do you mean positive? I was in a panic. Correct. the positive experiences that you were in a panic and nothing happened, even though you did not listen to the false alarm, you did not go along with it, nothing happened. So the positive experience, the positive outcome is I tolerated this, I didn't give into it, and I was okay. And I was okay again, and again, and again, and again. And then the message starts to seep in. That's how we fix this problem. So as you're doing this, as you're going through these activities, as you're doing your exposures on a regular basis, being incremental, systematic, tenacious about the need to go toward the things you fear, to re-experience them in a new way so you can begin to unlearn the fear of panic and anxiety and turn down over time, you will turn down your brain's false alarm response, the threat response. That's how this works. As you're doing these things, they all become additive. So the tiny steps you took in the beginning, just learning how to tie your shoes while you're panicking, will get you on a plane to Tokyo down the road. And when you practice driving, you know, to the school and back, you're actually also working on being home alone. Because remember, we're not trying to learn how to drive on the highway or go to the supermarket or bring the kids to school or go to the office. We're not learning to do those things. Those are tasks that we do to trigger the discomfort so we can learn that new relationship with it. We're not learning to do those things. We're learning to break that fear. I don't like anxiety. I don't want to panic. Nobody would. You don't have to like it, but you don't have to be afraid of it. And when you are no longer afraid of having a panic attack or feeling anxiety, then suddenly there is less threat in the world. You're not worried anymore. Oh, it might happen. It might happen. When you're not worried about it happening anymore, then it stops happening. That's how this works. So you don't have to solve the supermarket, the movie theater, the restaurant, the birthday parties, the highway, the office, the planes, the cruise. You don't have to solve every one of those problems if you're agoraphobic. You're really only solving one problem. And there comes a point in the recovery process that you lose enough of that fear that, oh, I could be home alone. Oh, I can go a little further. You don't have to learn all the things in life again, one by one. Like the things that you do to break that fear connection, fear of your own body and mind. You learn through experience that like, oh yeah, that's really uncomfortable. I don't want it to happen, but I don't have to freak out when it does. Right? So when you do that, that's how we fix agoraphobia. That's how you get over agoraphobia. But again, a lot of people get disheartened because it's like, oh my God, I'm going to be doing exposures forever because I'm afraid of so many things. No, you're only afraid of the one thing. And so if you're agoraphobic and you also develop monophobia, you're afraid to be home alone, you can do exposure where you are home alone intentionally. And you learn to surf through that, the discomfort, the anxiety, the fear. You might panic when you're home alone, but you learn to surf through it. Then it becomes less scary and less scary. But I'm telling you, when you do that, you'll also get better at the same time at going to the supermarket. And conversely, if you practice in the supermarket, you'll get better at being home alone. So it's a great process. It's a very difficult thing to do. Do not get me wrong. I say this again and again and again, and I lived this. I did this. I actually did this exactly the way I'm talking about it. I did that. That's why I'm not agoraphobic anymore and will never be again. I may have a panic attack tomorrow, but I will never be agoraphobic again because I'm not afraid of having that panic attack. It's that simple. That's how this works. That's how you break that cycle. And it is hard work. You are doing the opposite of what everything in your body is telling you to do. Your body is telling you to run. Listen to the alarm. There is danger here. We must get out of this. And you don't. That is not easy to do. There is courage involved, especially in the beginning of this recovery process. You have got to be courageous. Because in your mind, you are facing some horrible fate. When I panic, I think I'm going to go insane. Okay, you're going to have to go insane then. And then you don't. When I panic, I know I'm going to have a heart attack. Okay, then you're going to have a heart attack. And then you don't. So that's scary. I am going to acknowledge every day that I do this silly thing where I talk into cameras and microphones and write books, I'm going to acknowledge every day that it is hard. But it is so worth it. Right? Because if you are listening to me right now and agoraphobia is a problem, you are not digging your life. Otherwise, why would you be listening? You would like to change it, right? And it is hard to make that change, but it is possible. Hard does not equal impossible. Scary does not always equal danger. what feels best in the moment isn't always best in the long run. These are the bedrock principles upon which all of this stuff is based. And I didn't make any of this up. This has been going on for decades and decades now. Lots and lots and lots of clinical evidence in the field that says this is how you solve the problem of agoraphobia. And you're solving panic disorder at the same time, by the way. FYI, giant bonus. So if you have panic disorder with agoraphobia, you solve it all at the same time. You treat it all at the same time. You don't fix my agoraphobia, then I fix my panic disorder. No, you're fixing it all at the same time. How's that for awesome? Two for one. And if you want to throw in the monophobia, the informal monophobia moniker, well, you get three for one. Awesome. That's a good deal. But it's hard, and I know you hate to hear that you have to do these scary things, because everything you want to do is just, well, I want to do something that slows my heart rate down. I want to eat as something different. I want to use essential oils. I want to, you know, think positive thoughts. Okay, you can do that, but, you know, that hasn't been working so far. Pretty sure you've been doing that. And that is not working. That has not fixed this problem. So I know you want to do easier things. We all do. That is human nature. But in the end, agoraphobia is a fixable problem. Panic disorder is a fixable problem. It is eminently fixable. In the spectrum of a zillion mental health issues, right, that human beings can have, these are among the most fixable, addressable, treatable, curable, if you want to use the word cure. That's fine with me. It just is hard work. And this is how we do it. So that is agoraphobia. That is my 37 minutes or whatever this has been on agoraphobia. I've written a whole lot about it in my book. Go check it out, theanxioustruth.com/recovery guide. It is right targeted at panic disorder and agoraphobia. It absolutely is. So go check it out. But this is the stuff I talk about all the time. I know agoraphobia. I do. So hopefully this has been helpful for you. Of course, we'll talk about it more. I'm sure we will. Probably do some IG live and that sort of stuff about agoraphobia, and we'll answer questions like we always do. But in the meanwhile, I will play you out with Afterglow by my buddy Ben Drake, one of my favorite musicians right now. Just a good guy. You can find Ben and his music and this song at bendrakemusic.com. And as always, I'm going to ask another favor, which is if you're listening to the podcast on iTunes or any platform that lets you rate or review it, leave me a 5-star rating or take another 2 minutes and actually write a little review if you like the podcast. I do this to reach people and help them. And when you write reviews of the podcast, it helps more people find the podcast. And that makes me feel good. And I appreciate that. All right, guys, enjoy Afterglow. As always, I will see you next week. Thanks for spending time with me. I hope I've been able to be helpful for you. And I will remind you, as I always do, this is my new thing since I got obsessed with it back in December. This is the way. No looking back or dwelling on the past. You know you'll never get another chance, so go and live your life. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Push through the pressure like an atom bomb. You keep on dancing like it's your last.